Husker Doc Talk Podcast 2016, Episode 20. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. This will be the Music City Bowl edition. It's been a couple weeks since we talked to you. Good to have you along. I'm Travis Justice, joined by former Husker All-American, Dr. Rob Zadiska. We are recording this football podcast on a night where the Nebraska basketball team, which has basically not been very good during the non-conference portion of the schedule, goes to number 16 Indiana and wins. So maybe that's a good sign, Rob, that the bowl game could turn out halfway decent for the Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I don't know.
You don't think so?
I don't think it's a sign. I just think it's Nebraska basketball doing what Nebraska basketball does, giving us these little glimmers of hope, only to dash our souls later.
Yeah, it has not been a very good non-conference season for Tim Miles, but it's going to Indiana, the 16th ranked team in the country, one of the better teams in what is a depleted Big Ten. If Nebraska has one thing going for it in basketball this year, trust me, we're going to get to football. It's that the Big Ten Conference basketball is down.
I mean, it's not going to be a strong year.
No, not a strong year at all. Could be maybe just three, maybe four teams get in the NCAA tournament. A lot of basketball yet to play, but a good win for the Huskers tonight. Hey, we are, of course, brought to you by the Remington Trophy presentation. Don't forget, the Remington Trophy presentation is just right around the corner. If you have not purchased your tickets yet for the 2017, for the 2016 season, but 2017 edition of the Remington Trophy presentation at the Theater in Lincoln, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. It's January 14th. I can tell you right now, Dr. Rob's going to be there. I can tell you right now that I'm going to be there. I can tell you right now that we're probably going to be sitting together. But we're looking forward to it, aren't we?
Every year, this is probably one of the best. If you're a sports fan, especially a football fan, NFL and college, just an absolutely awesome night. The speakers are always outstanding. Dave always gets big name guys to come in, and I mean his guest list, and it's kind of a who's who of college and NFL history. I mean, there's always a bunch of NFL and college guys there. If you want a great experience, and you know, the other thing is that you really got to mention, it's such a great cause.
It really is. Of course, it benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation and cystic fibrosis. Again, go to RemingtonTrophy.com, RemingtonTrophy.com. To purchase your tickets, you're going to see a lot of former NFL guys, a lot of former Huskers. This year's Remington Trophy winner from Ohio State. So there's
called it like back in August.
You did. You know why? Because you're smart.
Well, I watched the guy play before. He's a hell of a center.
If you're looking for Music City Bowl gear, make sure you go to Husker Hounds, three locations in the Omaha area. Husker Hounds has all the Husker gear you need. Has Husker basketball stuff, Husker football stuff. Scotty's a great friend of ours, also a big fan of the podcast. So visit one of the three Husker Hounds locations in Omaha. And also want to say thanks to Husker Max, who's distributed this podcast. And that's not this year, but the last three or four years. Without Husker Max, this podcast probably wouldn't be heard by as many people as it is. So thanks to HuskerMax.com. When you're looking for Husker news, go to HuskerMax.com. And we're drinking beer. It wouldn't be a podcast without drinking beer.
I walked in the door and you already had a couple of beers in your hands.
Well, I'd already had a Shinerbach before you got here. And that was the last one.
Oh, I love Shiner.
I'm sorry. I thought I had more, but I drank the last one.
Shiner's kind of like the... It's sort of like the Midwestern college kids version of like craft beer. It's kind of, you drink a Shiner, you can feel like you're telling yourself you're drinking a craft beer. I like Shiner though. It's one of the best beers with barbecue. Love it.
But I did give you a straight from Kansas City, a Boulevard unfiltered wheat,
which is a solid beer. I like a good Boulevard. Boulevard actually puts out a whole slew of really tasty beers. And if you like heavier stuff, if you like something a little stronger, that Smokestack series they've got a great line of beers, and they do some specialty ones within that series every year that are good.
All right, Rob, I don't even know where in the hell to start, because since the end of the season game against Iowa.
So much
shit has happened. I mean, the loss against Iowa, which we've talked about, And then so much shit has happened since then. I don't even know where to start. Where do you start?
Well, we can talk a little bit about just what you're going to look at in the bowl game. And
screw that. Let's get to the players first.
What I'm talking about.
I mean, let's get to Western camp.
When you're watching this game, it's a situation where this is going to be a Nebraska team that we haven't seen before.
It's next year's team with minus the quarterback.
Well, you say that to a degree, though, but I'm looking at next year's team and some of these young guys that we haven't seen on the offensive line that I doubt we're going to see in the bowl game. And the only reason I say I doubt that is because we haven't seen them all year. At the quarterback spot, I mean, next year you're thinking it's going to be Tanner Lee and Patrick O'Brien. I really doubt you're going to see those two guys in the bowl game. I don't know. I mean, I keep hearing little speculations coming out of Lincoln that they're going to throw Patrick O'Brien in there, which would tank a redshirt year.
Is that smart?
No, I don't think it is. If that was the case, why didn't you play him, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah, I was going to say, Tom Chattel had the article in the Omaha World Herald a couple days ago about the American Football Coaches Association and Mike Riley throwing out maybe a proposal they're going to take to the NCAA, and that is allowing redshirts and transfers to play in a bowl game. And it doesn't hurt anybody. I like the idea.
I actually kind of like the idea because if that was the case, there's some of these guys in a situation like you have right now where I think it would be helpful to have some of these guys playing. Now, let's say Tommy Armstrong was healthy. That's a whole nother ball game. And, I heard the argument put out there by some other sports writers and some kind of the run of radio guys made the statement that, what kind of statement, though, does that make if you're a college football team, you get to the bowl game, and now you've got guys who still have a whole career in front of them who are playing instead of you. What kind of message does that send to the fifth-year senior walk-ons who would maybe be getting a little bit of bowl game playing time in a blowout win or a blowout loss?
I would say this. The only time you maybe would use that is if in Nebraska's situation, let's look at the injuries. Because if a guy was truly a difference maker, he'd have been on the field already, right? I mean, rarely are you going to hold somebody back in today's day and age. If they can make an immediate impact for you on the field, are you going to hold them back?
Yeah, for the most part. This year I think Mike is kind of a little bit of an outlier in that regard, just because with Nebraska, you had a guy like Armstrong who, while he does not fit Riley and Langsdorf's system in any way, shape, or form, the guy's got some playmaking abilities, and when he plays within the system, and he doesn't try and, I'm trying to think of a way to phrase this, stretch his abilities beyond what he should or could do, the guy does great. The guy plays some great football, and Nebraska's won some games because of him. It would be kind of interesting to me what a guy like Patrick O'Brien, somebody who from a skill set standpoint probably fits what Riley wants to do better than a guy like Armstrong does. But Riley last year and this year has kind of had the offense so tailored around the talent that he does have in Lincoln, and that's a credit to Riley that I'm not sure you'd be. It's not like you can jump from Armstrong to a Tanner Lee, Patrick O'Brien style quarterback in half a month here.
Okay, so Tommy Armstrong comes out today in Nashville and says, I might be available in a dramatic situation if Riker Fife gets hurt. Now, let me,
I think he could be. He made himself available for the Iowa game, and he couldn't walk.
So let me ask you this, because you hear rumblings, I hear rumors. A lot of people are saying, and I'm not necessarily believe it, but I was on the street the other day, and they asked me a question about, is Tommy Armstrong really hurt, or is he mad doing kind of because he wanted to work out at wide receiver and not play quarterback because that would be his best chance to make it in the National Football League? You haven't heard that one.
Oh, for God's sake.
I said that too. I just wanted to throw it by you.
No.
I know.
And here's part of it. You watch that play when he scored that touchdown in the I just completely blanked here. Was it the Maryland game? Minnesota game.
Minnesota game?
where he scored that touchdown that kind of gave, kind of solidified the win for Nebraska right at the end, where he popped the hamstring.
Okay.
Was that Minnesota?
I believe it was. I'm going back in time, but I believe it was.
I did. I've got like this pre-Iowa stupor that I don't remember anything before that.
But you
game.
Remember the Iowa game.
Oh, good God. I'm going to hear about this for another year. Oh, my God. Horrible.
But yes, I believe it was the Minnesota game.
Anyway, so when he popped the hamstring, if you watch that play, the moment he lands on that leg, the first thought that went through my head was, oh, crap, something went there.
Okay.
I mean, I could tell watching it, and I think anybody who spent any time around sports a lot or around medicine a lot, I've done a wee bit of both.
Yes, you have.
The moment that leg landed when he went into the end zone on that touchdown, instantaneous, was like, I don't know how bad it is, but something gave way there. You could just see it.
Yeah.
So I have no doubt that he's injured. Now, I don't know, maybe here's the thing, though. I mean, from a hamstring-type injury, what he's doing at quarterback is probably a little bit less stressful on that hamstring than he would be at wide receiver.
Does a hamstring take a month?
It depends on how bad. I think he tore it. I don't think this was a strain where it was a mild strain or a pull where there's maybe some mild tearing within the muscle. I think he flat out tore the damn thing.
Okay.
And if that's a case, yeah, you're looking at months. I mean, that's like a 2-3 month deal before you're back up to full strength. I mean, a good hamstring injury can linger for weeks easily. Now, I mean, it's all degrees. I mean, it's not like it's either pulled or it's not. That's not the case. It's not an on-off switch here. It's on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being your Joe Theismann and the hamstrings have completely come detached from the bone, and a 1 being somebody walks up behind you and smacks you on the back of the leg. I mean, I don't know how bad Armstrong's is, but I think it's probably up in the 6, 7, 8 range in terms of severity. And I think that's something that could take a few months here. But for him to say, or for somebody to speculate that he wanted to play wide receiver in this game and that's why he's faking this injury or faking the severity of it, you know, going out at wide receiver, I mean, you're asking a guy to basically be it's more to being a wide receiver than a track athlete, but you're asking a guy to line up and, hey, you're going to sprint as hard as you can and put a huge amount of stress on that hamstring 10, 20, 40 yards every single play. That's not exactly doing a torn hamstring a whole heck of a lot of good here. So if he's sort of milking this injury because he wanted to play wide receiver, you know, wide receiver is the worst position I think he could play in terms of injuring or re-injuring that muscle.
Well, the reason this also comes up is because Christian McCaffrey and Leonard Fournette have both decided not to play in the bowl games, and they're going to go basically listen to their agents and start working out for the National Football League. Your thoughts on doing that? And before you give me your thoughts, I'll say this. I was listening to a Sirius Satellite sports radio show, and there was an NFL GM on there who said, listen, this really isn't anything new. The difference is now these guys are just coming out and telling you what they're doing. And he goes, he could name several players that have said, oh, I all of a sudden got hurt before a bowl game. Or they would go out in a bowl game that didn't matter as much as like a national championship game and just not play as hard, maybe go 50%, 40%, not risking getting hurt.
And I'd be lying if I said I hadn't seen that happen either.
Yeah.
I mean, that does happen. And it probably happens, actually, with a reasonably high degree of frequency. Now, on a personal level, do I agree with it? No. Me, personally, I've always liked to think of myself as more of sort of a team concept guy. And there are a few things that fly in the face of that concept as deciding that you're just going to say, no, I'm not going to play in the bowl game. And that's disappointing. I mean, it really is. I mean, that's something that, for a guy that looks at team and team loyalty like I do, I mean, abomination is probably a little bit of a strong word, but it's something that for me personally, I would never do. You go out there and you compete and you play for those guys that you've shed blood, sweat, and tears.
But you always played in a bowl game that mattered.
Yeah, you know, four straight Orange Bowls. That wasn't bad. Two of those were
national title games.
Well, two were national title games. A third one resulted in Miami winning a national title. Yeah. So that essentially, I played in three national title games in college. So that stuff mattered. But you know what? I mean, every game mattered to us. Iowa State, even Marv Seiler running down the sideline mattered. I mean, that was the kind of thing that, like I said, you're going out there, and it's not all about you. When you're on a team sport like that, it's about you, and it's also about those guys on the team with you. It's the guys lining up alongside you. I mean, I can give you 20 different cliches for it, but it all comes down to the fact that it's a team sport and that this flies in the face of it. Now, do I understand when guys do that? Yeah, I get it. I would never do it, but I understand how guys do it. And when you look at society on the whole, let me rephrase that. When you look at sports society, I think there's a huge amount of hypocrisy because you've got the NFL that essentially uses college football as its minor leagues. You've got college football that in reality is rather A-OK with that. The players, I think, are OK with that. We tell these athletes, on one hand, you've got to act like student athletes, and you've got to be the good student, you've got to go to class, and you've got to represent the school, and you've got to follow all of these rules regarding professionalism and maintaining an amateur status. But then you turn around and you look at just the vast quantities of money that are being generated off of their effort. And, you know, for a lot of those guys, yeah, there is a payday. Yeah, there is, there's a lot of good that comes out of it. There's a lot of benefit that goes to the players. But it's, you know what, most of the athletes who play college football, everybody makes the point about, well, they've got all this talent and it's a talent thing. Yeah, you know what? Most guys who play college football are playing college football not based solely on just talent. They're playing college football because they were willing to put themselves through what it took to get to that point. And you hit a stage there when you're looking at that situation and you're looking at that degree of hypocrisy of the student athlete versus they're basically monstrous wage earners for their universities and for the conferences in which they play. And at some point, these guys are going to stand up, I mean, like McCaffrey or Fournette, and say, hey, you know what? This has basically been, to a degree, a little bit of a professional thing all along. Screw your hypocrisy. I'm going to play along with it, and I'm going to kind of pull back the curtain, and if you want to look at this as the seedy underworld of college athletics, fine. But there's part of me that does look at them. Would I ever do this? No. But do I understand why they do it? Yes, I do. And I think it's a little hypocritical to criticize these guys too much.
I will say this. What they did is better. It's even better as a teammate to come out and say why you're doing it than not go to class, not pick past 6 credit hours, and be declared academically ineligible for a bowl game. And you know what I'm talking about.
Nathan.
Yes. That's, you know,
I'm still.
You know, you are a former member of the Unity Council, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so Aaron Taylor.
God, I think 4 years in a row.
Aaron Taylor went off on Facebook and said, listen, and I love Aaron. Aaron said, this is bullshit. He goes, how does this happen? Because if the Unity Council would have been in place, the Unity Council would have had his ass early on, and he would have answered it to his teammates about why he's not going to class and not passing classes. True or false?
In the era in which we played, yeah.
Okay.
Completely, wholly and completely. I don't think they've got as much of that system set up. I think Riley's trying to reinstitute a degree of that. But he's also fighting against. There's still, you know, guys I've talked with who know players who are down there now have said there's still a degree of Pelini guys down there, and you know, not so much dissatisfaction with Riley. I don't think any of the players are upset with Riley.
He's the nicest guy in the world.
I know, and so I don't think anybody's angry with Riley. But I think there's still a lot of resentment amongst a contingent of the players about Pelini getting fired. And I think there's a lot of players who took it personally. I mean, it kind of goes back to the whole, hey, we were winning 9, maybe 10 games a year, and our coach got fired for that? What more do you want us to do? Well, it's more complicated than that. And I mean, even for, God, I thought I was pretty smart when I was 21, 22, 23 years old. But it's, you know, it is. It's more complicated than that. And I think...
Listen, not to pass 6 credit hours, that's just lazy.
Oh, it's utter bullshit. I mean, you know, it's one of these things, even if he's sitting there thinking, God, do I really need to do this? And you're there. Just go to class, do the work while you're there, get your degree and be done.
Danny Need told me one time, this goes back to the early 90s, Danny Need told me, as we were talking about just eligibility and everything, he goes, Travis, if I had to, I could keep a dead guy eligible.
It's possible.
He goes, I could keep a dead guy eligible. It would be like Weekend at Bernie's. All I got to do is wheel him to class. Just let him sit there. And more than likely, he's going to pass.
Yeah, it's not that hard. Now, I did talk to some, there's some university administrators I know. And this was pure theory, okay, that got thrown out there. I don't know if this is truly fact or not. I haven't looked up the rules, but to my understanding, some of this depends on when the bowl game falls or when the postseason competition falls. That if the bowl game had been played, if it was one of these really early bowl games, December, I don't know, 17th. Hold on. December 17th. And like I said, I might be misstating this, and I apologize if I am, but some of these postseason competitions that are over this winter break period here, on certain dates they're considered first semester, on some dates they're considered second semester. Well, there's some threshold date where everything counts as second semester.
Okay.
Well, if it falls on a second semester date, theoretically, you need to have passed first semester to be eligible to compete the next semester. Apparently, I was told Nathan had some inkling of this rule and thought that the date was like sometime in January.
Maybe before you come back for class or something.
Literally, yeah. And so his logic was, hey, unless we're playing for the national title, and even then, because I don't think they go back to class until like sometime second week in January after the national title game is played. Even if that's the case, basically he's sitting there thinking, I'm free and clear. I don't have to go to class anymore, and yet I will still be eligible all the way through. I'm told athletes in certain other sports in which championship series, etc., occur earlier than these bowl games do, oftentimes we'll let the classes slide, let eligibility go, knowing that by the time they complete any postseason tournaments, NC2A tournaments, championship tournaments, they don't technically lose their eligibility until after that has occurred. And what I'm wondering is if, like I said, I haven't spoken to Nathan. I've never met the guy. I don't know him personally. What I wonder is if he was thinking, hey, I've got until January whenever to play bowl games or championship games, and as long as the bowl game is prior to that date, I'm A-okay. And then all of a sudden he gets informed, oh, hey, by the way, that date's not January 11th. It's December 17th, guess what? You can't play in the bowl game now. That was what an administrator down in Lincoln told me. I don't know
But exactly, it goes back. But it goes back to the Unity Council and being held accountable. You guys would have held somebody like that accountable.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Goddamn team captain wouldn't be doing this kind of bullshit in the first place.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. What kind of leadership is that?
Horrible. It really is. I mean, it's just.
But isn't that a reflection on the coaching staff a little bit? Is that a fair accusation?
No, not really. Okay. Given the circumstances down there now where you had, I mean, he spent a couple years under one coaching staff, a couple years under another coaching staff. A lot of turbulence happens in there. And, I mean, you had a coach in Pelini who was polarizing.
Yes, he was.
Players either would live or die for the guy, or they couldn't stand him. And I think it was probably about two-thirds, one-third. I think about two-thirds of those players were, hey, I will live and die for this guy. I think there was one-third who hated his guts. But he was a polarizing guy. And if you were on the positive side of that polarization, which I am told Gary was, then you've got a situation where, you know what, it doesn't matter what the new coaching staff does. I think Riley and his staff worked minor miracles to get past a lot of that to a strong degree to win as many games as they have at this point. I think this team could probably do better the next couple of years as more of these Pelini guys move on.
Well, and I think once you get guys, I think quarterback next year, Tommy Armstrong is probably a better athlete than the two guys, but they'll run the system a lot better.
Agreed.
Think once you get your own guys in there.
I hate saying this, but I mean, don't discount the tall, lanky, pocket passing looking kid out of suburban California as an athlete. Brooke Berenger,
yeah,
he didn't have the quickness in terms of the, I'm going to put a juke move on a guy. Now, I saw Brooke juke a lot of guys. He wasn't as quick in that regard as Frazier was, but I mean, in terms of straightaway speed, Brooke consistently always ran a faster 40-yard dash than Tommy ever did. I mean, Brooke would outrun, on a straightaway, Brooke would outrun any defense you put him in front. And he had an NFL arm to boot. So, I mean, don't just assume that Tanner Lee and Patrick O'Brien aren't great athletes. I mean, there's a lot of tall, prototypical NFL passing quarterbacks who can run just fine. And so these guys might be better athletes than we think they're going to be.
So Nebraska now gets ready for Tennessee, and it seems like, I mean, talk about a history. Going back to 97 and to 99.
Decidedly one-sided up to this point.
It really has. Now, a lot of people don't give Nebraska a chance. Is that ripe for the picking for Nebraska, or do they not have a chance?
On paper, no. I mean, you look at everybody who's out. You look at the injuries. Yeah, you know what? It's not like there's been this magical restoration of depth on the offensive and defensive lines between the Iowa game and day and a half from now. There's just not. It's, you know, you're getting some of these guys back from injury. Foster's going to be more healthy playing at that left guard spot than he was the last two regular season games. They're going to be better than they were the last few weeks of the season in that regard, but it's not like you've got a huge amount of depth back. When have you gone into a game going, thank God we got Riker Fife? Well, actually, this game I'm sitting here going, thank God we got Riker Fife. But it's... Yeah, you know, I would love to have Tanner Lee or Patrick O'Brien playing quarterback, and it's not going to happen.
See,
I'd really love to have a healthy Tommy Armstrong, but I really don't think that's going to happen either.
If you go back and listen to the podcast of my radio show on 1460 KXNO in Des Moines, which I do every day, I've been saying this since basically September. why I think Nebraska has a chance is because I think Tennessee is the biggest poser in college football. I think it was overrated to start. I think Butch Jones is a fraud. I think I'm serious.
It's pretty strong words the way you're phrasing
it. It is. They are strong words. And let me – I think he's a very good recruiter. I think they have talent. I don't think he's an X's and O's guy. I don't think
– I will give you that.
I think the reason Tennessee underperforms is because Butch Jones is not a very good football coach.
I would that point I would probably not argue. This is kind of a tough one. I've watched Tennessee play a little bit, not a lot, but I have watched them a few games this year. Nebraska, I know very well from watching them, and I know Nebraska is going to go into this bowl game with a lack of depth. They're beat up physically. They're still beat up physically.
Nobody's given a chance.
Yeah. And there's some, there's some mental and emotional hijinks going on when you look at the stuff with like Nathan Jerry and you look at the stuff going on with Tommy Armstrong and the injury he's been dealing with. There's some mental blocks there that this team's going to have to play through. The thing is, though, and, you know, I'm not going to discount the fact that Nebraska has a chance. Nebraska has kind of this weird way of surprising me in bowl games. I mean, you look at when Armstrong was a freshman going against a Georgia team that was coming off of, just a hell of an SEC title game loss to Alabama. I mean, it was an absolute slugfest. And everybody said, oh, my God, Georgia's just going to slaughter Nebraska. Nebraska beats them.
Yeah.
And it was an ugly game. It was played in the rain. You could tell Georgia kind of didn't want to be there. They're feeling let down because if they had beat Alabama, they were going to play in the national title game. Now they're playing against, this, I think at the time, unranked Nebraska team in the rain in a non-BCS bowl game. And so I think Georgia was ripe for the picking. It's Tennessee. I don't think they're ripe for the picking, but I think this is a team that's hard to figure out, and I think they have underperformed. If you look at their schedule game by game, it's kind of weird.
Very weird.
It's like they beat Florida. They lose to Vanderbilt. They have a very close win. I can't remember. It was like Appalachian State or one of those.
Yeah.
Early on.
But then they had a really good win right after that.
You just can't figure these guys out. There is zero consistency to Tennessee's
play
this year.
They were a dark horse for the college football playoff, Rob. And
after that Florida game, yes. And then they lost like three or four straight. And
I tell you what, though, I'm excited. I like the matchup. You got two national names in Tennessee and Nebraska. I'm actually jealous. I would like to be in Nashville. I've never been to Nashville. I've heard great things about the city. If I'm a Husker fan, it's an 11-hour drive. It's an easy drive.
It's not you had said that before. You and I had a conversation about bowl games, and you said you would actually kind of like to see Iowa get this
one.
For that very reason, what did you say? It's like an 8.5-9-hour drive from Des Moines. All those Hawkeye fans who emptied their pockets for a Rose Bowl run last year and were disappointed. This is tank of gas and Motel 6, and you're going to a bowl game.
Have you gone to a bowl game since you graduated?
Went to a couple in the immediate years following, but, I got to throw the caveat out there. My younger brother was still playing for Nebraska.
Do you ever want to take the family to a bowl game? What would it have to be, a college football playoff? What would it have to be for you to...
No, I wouldn't mind going sometime. Actually, I would prefer a game that had a little less emphasis on it, just because I'm not sure I want to be down there for a massive amount of hoopla and hype and all the people that come with it. Going to a bowl game, it's a ton of fun. I like going. For me, it's always more been work and school for the kids and stuff like that.
But. So Nebraska's beat up. Nate Geary's out. Jordan Westerkamp's out. Tommy Armstrong's out. What is your prediction for the Music City Bowl? Give me your prediction.
Wow, that's a tough one. I think if Nebraska's defense can play reasonably well. I know Nathan's out, but there are other playmakers on that defense. And I think if they step up, I think if the defensive line plays well and can contain Tennessee's quarterback, Joshua, The kid can run. I mean, he can move around. He can make plays happen. The second half against Florida, the guy was just an absolute wrecking machine. He is a stud athlete. If Nebraska can contain him, then I think Nebraska's got a pretty good shot because I think they can grind him down. And if Riley's smart and does a good job grinding with the running game, because Tennessee, the one thing they haven't had a great defense. Now, I think they've got better athletes on their defense than what Nebraska has on their offense, but I think if Nebraska can go out there and wear down their defense, I think Nebraska's got a reasonable shot at pulling out a close win. It's going to be tough, though. I mean, a lot of it's going to depend on keeping Tennessee from scoring points, because even in the games that Tennessee's lost, they've usually been able to put up points. That's kind of been one of the things that when you look at them, they've always scored points. They haven't always outscored everybody, but they've always been able to put up some points.
And this is going to be one of the lesser bowl games that has a pretty darn big crowd. You know Nebraska fans are going to travel, and being in Tennessee.
I saw earlier this week there was only 200 tickets left.
That's crazy.
That's
great.
God, it's right. I mean, it's right. I shouldn't say right down the road from Knoxville. It's a bit of a drive for Knoxville, but I'll tell you what, it's a hell of a lot closer than it is for for Nebraska. I mean, it's. I think the place is going to be packed with volunteer fans.
So, as the time we're recording this podcast, Utah is leading Indiana 17-7. I would expect the Hoosiers to lose that game, but Northwestern has beaten Pitt 31-24.
Minnesota won.
You know what? That was impressive. That was an old-time, I hate the cliche and the stereotype, that was an old-time Big Ten game.
We are going to grind this out, keep you from scoring. I don't think Mike Leach knew what the heck was going on.
Which surprised me.
I think he would, well, I don't say that in the sense that, hey, this guy doesn't know what's going on. I'm saying I think Mike Leach was shocked by the fact that they weren't putting up 50 points.
And also, I was shocked that Minnesota was able to play so well, especially after what that team's been through and what the stupid boycott that they went through. I thought for sure Tracy Clays was going to lose that team. But right now, probably I'm going to assume that Indiana loses to Utah, so the Big Ten will be 2-2 after this recording, and of course a host of games on Friday and over the weekend. Randy Edsall renamed the UConn coach today. He goes back. Remember, he left.
So much of a better fit.
I would agree.
I hate to say it. It's kind of one of those that's – you get some of these – I hate calling them mid-major guys, but you get some of these mid-major guys who just fit well there. Him leaving UConn would be like Pat Fitzgerald leaving Northwestern.
And when he let – you know, when
any place else he goes, it's just not quite going
to
be as good.
And when he left the first time, he left – players are pissed at him because he had a text message and found out in the media, but he left UConn to go to Maryland. And it didn't work out at Maryland. And I'm with you. I think it's a good fit. I don't think Bobby Diaco got a fair shake. He only got 3 years. It's hard to do that. But I just think for the fit, I think Randy Edsall's a good pick for UConn.
I think it is, too. I think it's a much better place than Maryland for him.
Don't forget the Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 14th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. Dr. Rob's going to be there. I'm going to be there. Our wives are going to be there.
Might eat a steak.
Big, big steak. You know,
Dave likes his beef.
Here's what we'll probably do. Don't look for a podcast immediately after the bowl game. I know you guys will probably want one. But Dave's coming in like the second week of January beforehand. Maybe we'll get Dave in the studio and we'll do a podcast with Dave to wrap up the season. And
that would be awesome.
Yeah, I haven't asked Dave yet, but I'll just assume that Dave's going to go along with that.
We can bribe him with oysters on a half shell and beer.
I cannot wait. You know, it's a secret little thing of mine. I love it when Dave comes to town because we go to Shucks and we just eat like kings. I love it. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. Thanks for listening to the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. Huskers in action on Friday taking on Tennessee. We'll be back in the new year, 2017, to talk about the Big Red.